Welcome into the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Jason Williams of the Cincinnati Inquirer. You heard from us on Monday breaking down the Bengals' week one loss to the Steelers. So now you're going to hear us talk about their week two matchup as they hit the road for the first time this season and head to Dallas, which when we predicted our season records, I picked this game as a loss. Because I thought it might be challenging on the road, and I had picked the Bengals to win in week one. And I just, something in my gut was telling me this game against the Cowboys, like their defensive coordinator might have some wrinkles for Burrow and Zach Taylor that they're not used to seeing. So I marked this one down as a loss. Well, then Dak Prescott goes down in the week one Sunday night football game against the Bucs, has a thumb injury and could miss anywhere between 4 to 8 weeks. So now the Cowboys will be starting their backup, Cooper Rush. And to me, that is such an it's not a, oh, they're going to miss their star wide receiver or they're going to miss their star defensive end. Dak Prescott is the heart and soul of that team. And without him, I think their offense is going to struggle mightily, even though they do have Zeke and Tony Pollard. But I don't think that there's any way they're going to have enough offensive firepower to beat the Bengals defense. And after talking with Joe Burrow today, I fully expect him to have a big time game on Sunday. So my predictions for the season, even though I've already turned in, I am thinking this is going to be a Bengals win.
Excellent.
What do you have to say? Opening thoughts on the matchup.
My opening thoughts on the matchup are that I have a little different take than you do. I picked this as a loss initially, and I'm sticking with it. Mm-hmm. I think Dallas's defense is every bit as good as the Pittsburgh's, and maybe even better. It's on the road. It's a place where, and I know, like, and we can argue about that. Like, not you. I mean, just generally, we could debate this. The Bengals have won one game ever in Dallas, and that was in 1988. Home game for Dallas. Tough defense. You look back, I'm kind of looking back at last year and those first few weeks last year for the Bengals, and I keep going on this, and I don't want to stay on it too long, but I really think the whole preseason approach, when you look back at last year, the Bengals barely escaped the season opener against an inferior Vikings team. Mm-hmm. Overtime, 3-point win. Then they go and lay an egg at Chicago, a bad Chicago team. Burrow was not good that day. Another three-point loss. I see these first two games, certainly obviously the first one's over. I see this game kind of going the same way in the sense that it's going to take a couple games for the offense to get the kinks worked out. If this were not a good defense they were facing, I might feel a little different.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to be a narrow Cowboys win. It's going to be a defensive struggle. And I'm sticking with it.
So a few things there. If the Bengals do, in fact, lose at 0-2, are you pushing the panic button?
I am not. And it's fine. I'm glad you asked that because I raised that in my weekly prediction column that's coming out. It'll be out Thursday morning on Cincinnati.com. After I say I think the Bengals will lose, I then said, would it be time to push the panic button? I say, no, it will not be. And it's for these reasons that you see last year, it took them a couple games. Fortunately, they were able to go 1-1 in those first few games. This year, I think they're going to go 0-2 in those games. They might go 1-1, but I just don't think it's going to be time to push the panic button because we know what this offense is capable of. We know what Joe Burrow is capable of. And then, you know, I think the schedule gets it gets a little easier.
for a few weeks. Not anymore. The Dolphins look pretty dang good, and you know, you can't even pencil in a win against the Jets because, hello, last year, I think everybody in America had the Bengals beating the Jets, and then they lost to Mike White, and it was a whole deal. But here are some interesting things I got from being at the Bengals facility, open locker room, talking to offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, specific to what you were saying about starters not seeing action in the preseason games. I think for some players, it mattered. I think you could argue with Burrow, yes, it mattered. Where I think it mattered the most, and we basically got confirmation, was on the offensive line.
No doubt.
And today, offensive coordinator Brian Callahan was asked about the performance of the unit. And here are a couple of things. There's a bunch of layers to this. So there were 7 sacks, 11 quarterback hits that Joe Burrow took against the Steelers. Brian Callahan said between 3 to 4 were strictly on the offensive line. So every sack has a story. And everybody looks at the stat sheet and you see a number, but there sometimes it's on different people. Sometimes the offensive lineman gets beat. Sometimes the running back doesn't pick up their assignment. Sometimes Burrow holds on to the ball for too long. So Callahan said 3 to 4 of the sacks were on the offensive line. The rest, he said, were on the rest of the crew, which means quarterback, receivers not getting open, or the running back not doing their job.
Yeah, not picking up the block.
So that should make Bengals fans feel better, because you're hearing that from the offensive coordinator, who, by the way, his dad is a legendary offensive line coach. So if there's someone who knows the offensive line inside and out, it's going to be Brian Callahan. So when he says of the 7, only 3 to 4 were on the offensive line against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who 3 to 4 on the offensive line, only giving up 3 to 4 is a big time win against that Steelers defensive front. He did say, though, 7's too many. So he said there's things we got to clean up. So if you read between the lines, the rest of the crew needs to fix what they need to fix, whether it be receivers getting open, Mixon and Samaje Perine not doing their responsibility, Burrow not getting rid of the ball. So just wanted to make sure Bengals fans hear that, because I think sometimes it's easy for all of us to fall into a trap and you see a number. But then when you hear from the offensive coordinator, who's probably watched that film at this point 6 times, it's important to put context to it. So I thought that was important. But he did say something else that I thought you'll find very interesting. He was asked specifically about 2 players, Cordell Volson and Lael Collins. So Volson, he said, you know, it was a tough matchup against Cam Hayward, which that's a tough matchup whether you're a rookie or a year 16 vet. That guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's incredible. But he said as the game went on, he thought he played really well. And he said he thought he played really well in the second half. But when asked about LC in particular, he said it was evident that LC missed time during training camp.
Yeah.
So the tape showed, and he didn't get into the specifics of whether it was like from a physical conditioning or what exactly was the reason that he felt like him missing time in practice showed up on tape. But I took a mental note of that because I found that to be fascinating, because all training camp, it was, he's a veteran. Does he really even need to practice? How many times did we hear that? And the whole time I kept saying, no coach is ever going to want, no matter what year, their players to not practice, especially when it's a 4 out of 5 new players on the offensive line. It's his first season with the new team. The LC injury during training camp was a big deal. And you heard it from his offensive coordinator straight from his mouth that said him missing time in the preseason and training camp showed directly up on tape. So next year, let's remember this when, you know, certain veterans aren't practicing and people say, well, do they really need to practice? Yes, you do.
So let me ask you this, and because I'm so not sold on this new offensive line being better as an entire unit. And why would I be? There's they haven't given a reason to believe that yet. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one game. What about you know, the they could be facing the top pass rusher in the NFL and Micah Parsons this week. Do you see him really attacking that left side of the line? I mean, where do you see, how do you see that going?
No, because Micah Parsons, I have not heard from Zach Taylor to Joe Burrow to Brian Callahan. I have not, in now I've been covering this team, this is this, my second season here, I have not heard someone garner as much respect as Micah Parsons did today from Burrow, Taylor, and Callahan. Mm-hmm. And literally they said, there is not a young player in the league on defense that can do the things that he does. And Zach Taylor even compared him to Von Miller, who is going to be a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. So when you ask if I think Micah Parsons is going to be sent by Dan Quinn to specifically go after the left side of the Bengals offensive line, no, because where he is best is when they move him around the field. And that's why he's so hard to game plan against, because he can rush against guards. He can rush off the edge. He can drop back in coverage as a linebacker, because that was his traditional position until Dan Quinn unlocked just an incredible defensive weapon, because he's almost positionless to some degree. So I think that he is going, they're going to move him around.
Skills all over the place.
And they're going to go all over the place. And so that entire front and everyone that's involved in blocking and those receivers getting open, I think when you have your quarterback, your head coach, and your offensive coordinator say he is deserving of all of the praise that he gets, he is a game wrecker and he's that good, I think the Bengals, they're going to have a game plan that's centered around Micah Parsons, and I think he's going to come at them in ways that the Bengals haven't seen in a long time, which goes back to my point of why I picked them to lose. Because this isn't a matchup, as you kind of said, that happens that often between the Bengals and the Cowboys. And I think Dan Quinn's defensive scheme, he's going to have some wrinkles that it might take Burrow and Taylor a little bit longer to get together on the sideline and say, this is exactly what the Cowboys are trying to do to us. Here's how we're going to combat it. So I don't think it's...
You just dropped the mic on me?
Mic drop!
You looked at me like... Take that, pal.
Well, no, I thought, I mean, but honestly, you asked that and it played exactly into what I wanted to say.
Kels, I'm joking.
Yeah, no, I'm like, I just think that was so interesting.
You're ready
today
to play.
When
you were fired up.
Am I? Yeah. I guess I'm just fired
You're
up all
intense.
The time. Hey, I'm in game mode.
You are in game mode.
It's week two, Jason. They need my best. They need my best out there. Another player we should talk about, and it goes back to the storyline about Burrow's interceptions.
Yep.
Trayvon Diggs.
Yep.
Led the league in interceptions last year. The Cowboys led the league in interceptions.
Takeaways overall.
Yes.
Yep.
Burrow, point blank, cannot have another game like he did. They won't win if he has four turnovers.
I don't think he's going to have four turnovers again.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
Maybe ever in his career. I mean, there's going to be days when he struggles.
Yeah.
But four turnovers, it's hard to believe that could happen again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I 1 to 2, maybe. Like, I mean, Tom Brady threw an interception. There's going to be games that he's just off. Like Matt Stafford, didn't he throw three against the Bills? I would not anticipate Burrow having the type of performance that he did. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Since this is kind of the first year you're covering the Bengals as a columnist and you're watching every play of the game in a different light, how impressed were you? And I do think it gets overshadowed because all people want to do is talk about his first half. Did it impress you, the moxie he has, given he played the worst first half of his career, that he played so much better in the second half and got them to a point, had they not missed the extra point with seconds, that they could have won that game? Like, does that make you feel even better about Joe Burrow, that, like, he can be you know, horrendous in the first half. But even on his worst day, he can still flip the switch and get that team to have a chance to win. Like that impressed me.
Absolutely. This is my thought on Joe Burrow in general, is that I think the Bengals have a shot to win every game because of Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. Are they going to? No. I mean, that's not reality, but there's just something about him that, especially after last year, that I don't know. There's just that part of, and again, this is just me observing it. You just feel like, all right, okay, yeah, if the Bengals, they win the game, because they have Joe Burrow. Like,
yeah.
I remember the, what was it, the 09 UC Bearcats team that went undefeated?
Yes.
And were you at UC?
No, I was not at UC then.
You weren't, so were you not there yet?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
2010, I got there.
But I don't know. Like, I've thought back at that team, and it's different because they had Brian Kelly, and I know whatever people say about Brian. But because you had Brian Kelly as the coach, you always felt like watching the Bearcats, whatever game they were going in, they had a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have that same feeling about Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
And I know it's a coach on one hand and it's a player on the other, but there's just something about people like that. They're winners. They're leaders. They instill some kind of a confidence that it's hard to even comprehend in their locker rooms that you just feel like, yeah, like, okay, man, not surprised. That's Joe Burrow's on that team. Not surprised, Brian Kelly. And this is Brian.
Yeah.
This is Brian Kelly, UC coach, not
LSU
Brian
coach.
Kelly post UC. I'm talking about just that time frame. So, yeah.
That's a really great comparison.
And that's just me, and that's how I felt about it, and that's how I think and I see this now. And it's hard to get your arms around, just even comprehend the level of impact, or because we're not there. You don't see every little, you know, conversation or every little, like, you know, wink or nod or how he looks at someone or doesn't, or you know what I mean? But you just, there's that air about those guys that whatever locker room they're in, and that they're just, they have a shot.
Yeah, I think that is 100% spot on. And based off the way Burrow talked today, I think he has moved on from the performance. And I specifically asked him what stands out to you about Dallas's defense. And I was expecting him to go through the whole defense, like, oh, this guy up front, this guy in the middle of the field, this guy in the secondary. And he literally said, Micah Parsons, period.
He said, period.
Well, like, he literally paused and he said, Micah Parsons. And then he went into how he's a game wrecker and just the way that they use him. But that's why I was saying that's how much respect Micah Parsons has when the quarterback doesn't even bother to mention, you know, the cornerback who led the league in interceptions coming off of a performance in which he threw four interceptions. So if that's not telling of what the Bengals think of Parsons, and basically like the game plan is going to revolve around how do we scheme up so that we can make sure that we're protecting ourselves against Parsons. So I thought that was interesting. But for the most part, he didn't seem fazed about his interceptions. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be back to normal Burrow. It's actually playing at AT&T Stadium's the first – he's returning to AT&T Stadium for the first time since his first LSU game when he transferred. So he was asked about, like, is that sentimental? And, you know, typical Burrow. He's like, people keep asking me about it, but, like, not really. But it is interesting to think about just, like, how far he's come from that first game that was played at AT&T Stadium to now.
Who'd they play?
I don't know.
Oh, you're supposed to know that, right?
I know. I'm supposed to know everything.
Is that 2018?
Because 2019 was the year that they went on that magical
National
run.
Championship run,
yeah. So, yeah, Cowboys, let me ask you, what do you think about Zeke Elliott? You think he's overrated, about rated as good as he should be? What are your thoughts on Zeke?
I just think he's like a kind of a run of the mill. Mm-hmm. Like when he first came in the league, you're like, ooh, this guy is like,
yeah, he set the league on fire.
Be a superstar. Mm-hmm. And he's just come back to solid. Mm-hmm. But that's the word that comes to mind. Like, I have solid running back.
Yeah.
Nothing spectacular. Yeah, I saw last week what he gained 60. I think it was 63. I don't have the stats. It was kind of meh.
Yeah. Meh. That's kind of how I feel about his NFL career. Yeah. It was all splash when he was first drafted. The crop top jersey, hair, the nose ring. And then he's just been meh. And people have made excuses for him, but he was playing behind. Can't forget about the crop top.
The crop top on draft day too, right? Wasn't it the?
I don't know if it was draft day. I just remember him.
I thought he had a crop top, like dress shirt under his.
He might have, but I just think he should be better for the amount they're paying him.
Yeah.
And not to mention, up until this past year, he's had a really good offensive line. So there's. No excuse there.
From that, so.
Speaking of that, I asked Brian Callahan, how do the Bengals run the ball better in the red zone? Because all last year, like, not good in the red zone.
And then
Burrow and his explosive plays with Chase.
Last Sunday.
Yes. Burrow and his explosive plays bailed them out of a lot of situations scoring-wise. I asked Callahan, how do you fix that, because that was an area coming in, and he said a lot of it is technique. And I said, then what ticks you off more, the 11 quarterback hits and 7 sacks, or not being able to score on the 1 yard line? And he said, not being able to score on the 1 yard line. So if that doesn't explain, like, what's the emphasis going to be this week, they need to find a way to, when they get to the 1 yard line, move that pile and get 6 points and not Evan McPherson trotting out there. He's great for security reasons, but when you're on the 1 yard line 4 different times and you can't get it in.
That's frustrating. Because those touchdowns make up for those sacks.
100%. So I thought that was an interesting way to look at it, because the sacks will be dominate the headlines, but the real story is, in last year, I actually have the numbers because Callahan shared with me, they were 25th in the league in short yardage conversions, and it was something like 50 attempts. I don't know what the percentage was, but that was from last year. That's 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 situations, 25th in the league.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good.
So you've got all these explosive weapons that are great to move the ball down the field to get you where you need to get to. But the Bengals have got to find a way in short yardage situations.
Punch it in.
To punch it in. And I guess what confuses me the most, I was fully anticipating that to be in. I'll explain that. Yes, it's only week one. This team can get a lot better. And I do think the Bengals are a very good team. The offensive line, I thought, was going to make the biggest difference in being able to just push the pile 1 yard line. But it wasn't evident against the Steelers. So how do they fix that?
Remind me, it was twice inside the 5?
There were 4 1-yard opportunities that they were not able to score a touchdown in.
That was on one possession.
I wouldn't know the breakdown, but overall.
They were on the 1 yard line.
Yes.
4 times.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I don't know who's the answer for them, the red zone, but that's one of the things I'm most excited to see develop.
You're writing about that, right?
Mm-hmm. You got something coming my red zone stuff and short yardage stuff. But
Later this week.
I asked Jonah Williams about it, he said that it's technique. So then I followed Jonah's answer up with Brian, and I said, what does he mean by the technique? And his answer was great. He went into the nuances of, like, well, just one small thing that someone doesn't do can disrupt all of that. So I'm curious to see who is going to step up and be the big red zone threat if they can't run it. Because if they can't run it, it cannot just be Jamar all day like it was on Sunday. And another point that the Bengals coaches made and Burrow, it'll get lost in the shuffle, but they spoke very highly about the game Ja'Marr Chase had. And when I went back and rewatched it on Monday, he was incredible. And it makes you wonder, like, next year we'll have all the time in the world to talk about, like, if the Bengals are going to be able to re-sign T. Higgins. But you got a preview because Tyler Boyd was out for a couple plays. His leg was cramping. Mixon was dealing with cramps. You got a preview of what this offense will look like if they can't sign Higgins. And it's all on Ja'Marr. And he did a great job carrying them. But, yeah, that's not ideal.
I got one more question before we jump over and jump out of this segment. What did the Cowboys do with Chase this week? Are they talking about Chase the way the Bengals are talking about Parsons?
So I haven't quite gotten into the Cowboys.
I understand. I'm just saying, do you think that they view?
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you watch that?
I'm not saying, like, did they say that?
I mean, they moved Chase around so much that their whole game plan, I'm sure, will be around him. But hopefully Bengals will have T. Higgins back. Zach Taylor said he's passing all the markers. He's in the protocol. So they'll slowly get him back into things. But, yeah, we'll see. What is Diggs going to travel with Chase all over the field? We'll see. And we'll see how many times Burrow attempts at him, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Because you're going one of the best young receivers up against the best ball hawking corner. So we'll see. But there's just tons of intriguing matchups about this game, which is what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Definitely. Now we call an audible like we do every week. Bring in Charlie Goldsmith with our X's and O's statement to break down what he's seen. He watches all kinds of film. And Charlie, what are you seeing here?
Dan Quinn, the Cowboys defensive coordinator, made a fascinating identity shift last season. He was known for his high zones and taking away the back of the field with deep zone coverage. But last year with the Cowboys personnel, he scrapped that and said, we're going to play man-to-man at one of the highest rates in the entire NFL and rely on the athletic playmakers they have at cornerback specifically. The Steelers guarded Ja'Marr Chase in a very similar way. Go back and look at his best receptions, his biggest completions. They were snaps where Chase used some sort of wiggle or some sort of mid-play adjustment on his route to get open. And he did get open, and the Bengals moved him across the field to consistently keep the safety away from the play and buy Ja'Marr enough time. The Cowboys, based on this new Dan Quinn, are going to take the exact same approach, forcing Ja'Marr to move around the field to get open and forcing him to adjust his routes against a lot of man coverage.
Yeah, you asked me how I think the Cowboys will try and defend Ja'Marr. There you go. Charlie just broke down what he thought they'll try and do. I mean, I covered Dan Quinn's defense for 6 years, so I know exactly what Charlie's alluding to, how his scheme changed. But it just goes to show how much the personnel makes a difference, and the Cowboys' defensive personnel, like you were saying earlier, Jason, is – it's up there. You say the Pittsburgh's defense was really good, but you could argue the Cowboys' defense is even better, which I guess is probably why it was so surprising how the Bucs were able to run on them like they did on Sunday Night Football, because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are not a power run team. And there was a lot of talk about
Leonard Fournette just went crazy.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette showing up to the offseason incredibly out of shape. Coaches were mad. He was like 20 pounds heavier or something. They clearly identified that as an area that they could attack against the Cowboys, which makes you wonder what Mixon's role is going to be, because I predicted Mixon to have a big game against the Steelers, and I was wrong. So
I did too.
I don't know what to expect of Mixon in this game. So, because I think, I mean, the logic here would be, right, if you get beat one way really bad the first week, that's on tape. you'd expect the offensive coach of the other team to try and, you know, expose you in the same way. And every good defensive coordinator is then going to say, well, we're not going to get beat again this way. So what does that open up for the Bengals if they do kind of sell out to stop Mixon in the run game? But then you also have to deal with what Charlie's saying is, if they're moving Chase around, like, who is going to be the star of Bengals Cowboys?
Charlie, I want to ask you one other thing. As you've watched the film and studied this stuff, when the Bengals are on defense, what do they have to do?
When the Bengals are on defense, it was really interesting. So the Cowboys opened the game with Dak Prescott, obviously. And even though they had a very, very good quarterback, what you saw the Cowboys do early on was a bunch of, they did a double reverse. They did a triple option. They did a bunch of two running back sets. And my initial reaction was, you have Dak Prescott. What are you doing all this for? Just throw the ball down the field. And now Dak Prescott's out. So that makes you think that the Cowboys are going to try to use creativity as the defining principle of their offense, plus the power run game, which was fine against Tampa Bay. Elliott averaged 5 yards per carry. Rush was more aggressive, just trying to chuck the ball down the field than Prescott was. So maybe he'll end up giving your safeties down the field more opportunities to create turnovers, which Dak, with one notable exception, did a better job doing. But it's probably going to start with just containing all the trick plays they got there. They try to do, and then Dallas has one star receiver on their team that you need to be prepared for in the slot.
Charlie, as always, thanks for stopping by. Appreciate your insight.
Yeah, it's great.
Good to see you guys.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I think the way that we should end this podcast every episode is what I'm most looking forward to, what you're most looking forward to over the weekend. And it doesn't have to be Bengals, doesn't have to be football related, could be anything going on in your personal life, whatever. I will start and say what I'm most looking forward to is the press box food at AT&T Stadium, because I have a power rankings of press box food in the NFL. If anybody would like for my list of that, I got you.
You ever tweeted it?
No. I should. I think people would eat that up. But the Cowboys spread is incredible. Like, really? Jarrett Jones does a lot of things, high quality, and his press box food selection is – it's one of those games that when you find out you're going to AT&T Stadium, you circle, not because it's going to be this beautiful stadium and, you know, all that comes with it. It's because the press box food is elite.
It's better than Gold Star chili?
Oh, that's coming from someone who doesn't eat chili. So, okay. But yeah, that's what I'm excited for.
I like the Coney bar.
Okay.
At halftime.
Yeah.
At the Bengals.
Yes.
But I'm also a huge Cincinnati chili person. So, and I like all of them.
I gotcha.
With the exception, like, one mom and pop, but I like the ones that most people know about.
What's your favorite chili place in Cincinnati?
Price Hill Chili. And Skyline. I haven't told you. This is before you came to inquire. It was during the pandemic. Cause I was, you know, we were all just whatever going crazy. So I decide, you know, everyone's doing carry out and this is when all the restaurants are shut down. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm tired of being at home. So I do a chili tour where I decide I was going to eat one meal a day at all the main chili parlors around, or almost all of them. I made it 6 days, and I think I hit all of them but one. And I ranked them, and I think my rankings were Price Hill Chili, Skyline, and Camp Washington. So,
well,
you'll take my word for
Cincinnati
it.
Cincinnati listeners, if you're looking for a new chili spot, there you go. What are you looking forward to this weekend?
I'm looking forward to Bearcats, Miami. I'm looking forward to the Bearcats getting another win, another step. They're playing at Paycor Stadium. It's technically Miami's home game.
You think there'll be a lot of people there?
I do. I think there'll be a lot of Bearcats fans. Okay. Yeah,
not a lot of
UC sold out its allotment of tickets. I don't know how many that were. I was just told they sold out. They sold their allotment of tickets. Mm-hmm. I know the upper decks weren't sold, mm-hmm. So I don't know what that is, you know. But certainly, I like the Miami UC rivalry, but I also remember it from when I was at UC when in the 90s when you know, especially early on in my college days, UC was an independent, and it was a bigger deal when UC was an independent, right. And that was the game every year for UC.
What is it? Not the Keg of Nails.
It is the Keg of Nails is Louisville UC.
But what Victory it's like Bell. Victory Bell. I knew it was something.
And
like
the Bearcats
that.
Have won yeah. it 15. They've kept it for 15 straight years, and they will continue to
keep
it.
We got to keep it going.
They'll keep it.
Got to keep it going.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Nice. I don't know if I'll go or watch on TV, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, that should be fun. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think that one's on TV.
But I'm also a college football junkie, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a great time.
I always look, because I look forward to every yeah. Saturday.
I had a great time at the Bearcats game last Saturday. I got to go. It's one of the few games I get to go to this season, so I for sure had a blast. The Bearcats yeah, student section is rocking, and it was awesome. All right, well, that is it for Jason and I this week. We will be back next Monday to break down everything you need to know about the Bengals and the Cowboys. But before we get there on Sunday, be sure to check out Cincinnati.com. As the week goes on, we'll have everything you want to know about the matchup and everything right there for you. Yeah.